Welcome to Season 11, Episode 34 of the About 2 Podcast. In this episode, we're going to discuss the Clockwork Pie. We'll also have some command line love and go over your feedback. I'm Mark, and joining me this week are Alan.
Hello, you.
And Jesse's back. Somewhere. Hello, Jesse.
I'm here. There's a little drum solo there.
Drum solo?
Oh, I thought Samantha was playing some funny music. But yes, I'm here. Thank you for having me back.
She is playing some funny music.
She does that all the time.
Yeah. It's her thing. Oh, dear. Right. Alan, what have you been up to since last week?
I have been playing with a thing called Easy Open VPN. It's a implementation of Open VPN, and it's really easy.
Well, that's a good name.
Yeah. The reason is I wanted to set up a VPN at home. Not for VPNing out, but for VPNing in to my home network for when I'm away. Okay. And I thought, rather than do this at the last minute when I'm flying out somewhere, I thought, I know, I'll set something up on a Raspberry Pi and leave it running. And then when I'm away from home, I'll have everything necessary to connect to home if I need to do any like remote assistance, remote hands helping the family, or, you know, reset a printer or whatever it is.
Right.
I can do that or access files on my home network.
So what do you do to set this up?
You're never going to guess. You get a Raspberry Pi and then you snap install Easy Open VPN.
Okay.
One of my colleagues has made a snap of it, which makes it super easy. And there's a few extra commands. And I've written a blog post, which will probably be published by the time this episode goes out, which details all the steps. It's a little bit convoluted. There's a few, you know, you've got to generate a certificate and then you've got to export the credentials out and then you import, you've got to get them to another machine, your laptop, and then import the credentials. But once you've done that, you're done.
Right.
And that part's an important step in the security. So how did you get those credentials from the machine that made them to the machine that's going to use them as the key?
Well, they're right next to each other on the desk. So I can use a USB key to just like put the credentials on a USB key and then unplug it and then plug it into the other machine and import them. Job done. Or I could SCP it across the network or anything, really.
Yeah. And then stamp on the USB key in case anyone comes in your house.
Yeah, I guess I could do that. But also there's a password on it, I think.
I watched a YouTube video of someone doing OpenVPN when I was planning on doing something similar with my server. And he was really, really, really keen on using a very convoluted way of getting the key from one place to another. Even he was in the same studio and he was doing all sorts of bizarre methods. I think it was going to Android, which was part of his tinfoil hat.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds good.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought that snaps are stupefying the audience?
What, making them too stupid to operate a computer?
Yeah, because everything's so easy with a snap.
You can come again, Jesse. Well, it's not quite that easy because you've still got to DD an image onto an SD card and you've still got to then set up your credentials. So there's like a bunch of steps, but once it's done, I'm super happy because I can VPN in actually from my Android phone or from my laptop. And I also tested it on a Mac as well. You can even use exactly the same VPN credentials on other legacy operating systems as well. So yeah, that's what I've been playing with.
Great. Well, let's get on with the show. Now, a few shows ago, Alan mentioned that he had a new toy called the Clockwork Pie Game Shell. So, Alan, you've had it for a while now. Why don't you tell us a bit about it and how you've been getting on?
Okay, then. So this was a Kickstarter thing that I backed, and regular listeners of this show will know I back quite a lot of things on Kickstarter. Well, I have done.
And this one arrived?
This one arrived, actually. I backed it in November last year. 2017, and it arrived August the 30th. It was supposed to be delivered April 2018, but actually was delayed a little bit. And there was some extra delay because it got held up in the Netherlands because the battery, they hadn't written the details of the shipping correctly. So they shouldn't have put the battery inside the package. So the people in the Netherlands ripped out all the batteries and forwarded all the shipping on. So I ended up getting one without a battery.
Oh, good.
And then a couple of weeks later, a battery arrived, and then I put it all together. But it's basically, I think there was something like 2,600 people raised nearly $300,000, and they only asked for 50,000. So it was quite successful. And yeah, they did ship, and I did get it. But it's basically a plastic case that looks like a Game Boy, mm-hmm. an old, like, original Game Boy. But inside it, there is a ARM-based computer.
So it's called a Clockwork Pi. Is it something like a Raspberry Pi?
It's called a Clockwork Pi Game Shell. And the Game Shell, it's a gaming device. It's intended to be for gaming, and it looks like a Game Boy. And it's got a D-pad and the buttons, and it's got a color screen. But yeah, at the heart of it, there's an ARM SoC. There's a board that looks like a Raspberry Pi. It's slightly smaller than a Raspberry Pi and flatter because it doesn't have a giant Ethernet port or USB ports. They're all tiny little board-based connectors. Mm-hmm. So it's much smaller than a Raspberry Pi, but it's that kind of thing, yeah.
Okay. And what software is running on it?
So nothing, because these things are inert without an SD card.
Okay.
But you get an SD card with it. I think it was an 8 gig SD card, and actually it shipped with Debian, which I was quite pleased with, because, you know, I'm familiar with Debian. Yeah. But you can just SSH into it over the network. It's pretty easy to get onto the network. It's got a graphical user interface. When you boot it up, this little GUI appears.
Yeah.
And bearing in mind the screen is only 2.7 inches, 320 by 240, non-touch display. It's quite small, but it's still got a big enough user interface for you to be able to select the Wi-Fi network and type in the access code and all that kind of stuff. And then you could just SSH into it and copy files across the network and all that kind of stuff. It's basically just a Linux computer in a Game Boy case. Mm-hmm. It's just great.
So is it, I mean, when you say it's Debian, is it just stock Debian, or is it like have a layer on top of it to provide the interface, or you just got like a GNOME desktop on a very small screen?
Oh no, it's not a GNOME desktop. It's a custom UI.
Yeah.
With some big buttons and a little not menu bar, a indicator thing in the corner to tell you the volume and the network mm-hmm. and the time. But I don't know what it's written in. It's definitely running under X, but it's a very simple user interface with big buttons, and it's really easy to use and actually easy to modify as well. So you can add additional software because it's just a Linux system.
Yeah.
You can either install packages from the archive. So I've apt installed stuff from the archive, and also you can just unpack stuff in very specific directories, and the launcher will find those folders.
Right.
You know, you can put like desktop files in the right place. And once you configure it correctly, which is not particularly hard, you get additional icons showing up, and then you can just scroll between them left and right and then press the fire button to launch things. And then there's a menu button to exit back out the application. It's very much like the 6-button interface: up, down, left, right, mm-hmm. fire and back. It's really, really nicely done. It's pretty quick, boots up fairly fast. And once you're booted into the user interface, you can launch stuff. And if you want to play something else, you just back out of that and launch something else. It's not a multitasking user interface. You don't alt tab between mm-hmm. stuff. You're only wanting one thing at a time. But that's typically the case when you're playing games. You don't tend to alt tab between, you know, MAME and a NES emulator. You're either running one or the other.
So on the hardware side of things, it's modular, and I see there's a screen, there's the brains of the box, there's the keys and what have you. What does that modularity get you? Why didn't it just come as a single piece?
So I think the idea is that it's for developers, and the idea is that there will be additional modules. So it might be that there are an additional module that has sensors on it, or that has a breakout box for the GPIO pins, so you could use it, have sensors. Or maybe there's a module that you put in there that does the gyroscope mm-hmm. or something like that, so you could use it as a controller with you know, movement sensing and that kind of stuff. So I think the idea is that it's upgradable and modifiable. They don't want it to be just like a fixed box, and you get the box and you play the games and that's it. The intention is very much that you would tweak it and modify it. And, you know, you could 3D print the case. You don't have to use the case at all. You know, it happens to be a bunch of boards that are connected together with wires, and they provide a plastic case, and you put it in the plastic case and it looks like a Game Boy. But there's no obligation to use that case. You can put it in anything you like. You can 3D print your own. You could make something that has a bigger screen maybe and use a third party screen, and make something that looks bigger, like a Nintendo Switch kind of style, with a higher resolution display maybe. But that's just like the base model. And the idea is that it makes it easy for people to develop their own games and port games to this platform. And it is intended to be a gaming device, like, but a kind of homebrew hacker gaming device rather than a like a Game Boy device where you buy cartridges and plug them in.
So yeah. with it being designed as a gaming device, does it come with any games, or is it a case of, you know, you've got to install them from the Debian archive or write them yourself or whatever you like to do?
Yeah.
That's like down to you what games you've got.
It does come with a couple of games. It comes with Cave Story, and there's a little free Doom, and there's also a bunch of emulators pre-installed. So MAME, the arcade emulator,
right.
MGBA, the Game Boy emulator, and Nestopia, the Nintendo NES emulator, they're all pre-installed, but there's no ROMs on there because obviously, you know, legal stuff. But I have some MAME ROMs for the boards that I own. So R-Type, Salamander and stuff like that, that I really, really enjoy playing. And all my arcade boards are now in the loft. And so I don't play them very often, but I really, really love playing them. So now I can put those ROMs on this device and I can sit and play R-Type or Salamander or Bomb Jack or any one of the other games that I really enjoy playing. At any time, just turn it on and within a minute or so, I could boot into MAME. But yeah, it comes with only a couple of games, but it's pretty straightforward to put more games on there. Just a case of SSHing into it or copying files over the network. It's got Samba built in as well. So you can just, you know, point your file browser at it and drag files onto it. And there's a little community of people who are writing instructions for newbies. Cause you can imagine some people who bought these aren't as technically adept as I am and, you know, want to know how to put new games on their system. And so it has, a nice little community of people who are adding, you know, additional games. And so one of the games I put on was, Prince of Persia, SDL Pop, which is an open source re-implementation of Prince of Persia. And another one that I really like is called Cannonball, which is a re-implementation of Outrun, the arcade game. And that is just brilliant. The speakers on this thing are really good. And listening to the old arcade Outrun music coming out of this little thing, playing the original arcade Outrun ROMs is just great. I love it.
So other than the gaming, if you were to use this for something else, could you imagine any other, you know, portable use or out of the house type use?
Yeah, I think it could be useful for things like wireless access scanning and like taking it on like war driving or maybe some location based game because it has Wi-Fi. It hasn't got GPS, but it has got Wi-Fi. So you could be like, you know, scanning wireless networks with something like Kismet or something because it's got a battery and it's got a display. Mm. You know, you could do kind of interesting things like that. You could write applications for it. I mean, it's a Linux box, so you could use Python or Lua or anything you like, really, because it's just X, you know, under the covers. There's just, as long as you can draw to an X window, you're fine. So there's probably lots of things that I haven't thought of that I could use it for. I primarily want it for the games because I want something that I could just turn on and have a play while I'm, you know, picking up Sam from football or picking up Sophie from dancing. I'm sitting in the car, I want to play a game, so I can just get that out and play on it. And it's got a battery which lasts for long enough that I need some hours. But yeah, I haven't thought of things outside of the gaming area that I would use it for, partly because it doesn't have a proper keyboard, because it's only got the up, down, left, right and a few fire buttons. It's a challenge. You'd have to make a user interface for whatever it is that doesn't need a proper keyboard, that only needs like 8 keys or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you need to get some Bluetooth in there and be able to whip a Bluetooth keyboard onto it.
Right. And it does have ports. I mean, there are a Steam controller. Well, yeah, actually, that's not a bad idea. But then there's still all the user interface you have to build for whatever it is. But I think that's the whole point of it, is it's meant to be hackable. It's not meant to be a closed system. It's meant to be as open as possible. And I think the idea is you share whatever you create on their forum. They've got a nice, friendly discourse where people are sharing their creations. And, that's working out really well. So even though so far all I've done is really play a few games and add a few extra games, I think there is more you could do with this, especially once they get to the point of building additional modules and maybe other people come up with modules that can plug into this thing. I think it'll be even more interesting.
Cool. And where can people go to find out more if they're interested in getting one for themselves?
So if you go to clockworkpie.com, it's, I think it's on pre-order now because the Kickstarter is now finished. Mm-hmm. But I think you can put your name down to order one of these. I think some people are selling them on eBay as well because maybe they're not what they expected or, you know, just want to get rid of it. But you could probably pick one up on eBay or I imagine, but you're not getting mine because I love mine. And I am definitely keeping it because I love it.
Cool. Well, if any of our listeners have a Clockwork Pie, we'd be interested in hearing your thoughts. You can email show@ubuntupodcast.org.
If you love the command line as much as we do, send us a command that will blow our minds, and we might even mention it on the show. Send your command line love to show@ubuntupodcast.org.
And now it's time for command line love. And this week, listener Robert emailed us some excellent command line love. He said, I just moved my Get Ubuntu Podcast bash script, which outrageously didn't win last year's Entroware Apollo competition, from GitHub to GitLab. In the process, I checked the script in shell check. It's a great utility for anyone writing shell scripts. It picks up lots of common errors, such as incorrectly quoting variables. Each error has its own code, so you can look it up on the shell check GitHub pages. For instance, I had quite a few double quotes around variables, which unquoted the variable error SC2027. And he provides us with the link for that error. I hope that's a nice command line love.
This is funky. I ran this against some of my shell scripts, and they all fail.
Yes, it's easy to make mistakes and do things which might not turn out well depending on values of certain variables and returns from certain commands. So it's useful to have something else that knows what you should be thinking about better than you do.
Does it have a fix my script option, or does it just tell you when they're broken? It knows the problem. It knows I should put quotes around stuff. Can it just put the quotes around stuff?
It doesn't look like it has an option to fix it for you, unfortunately.
It's making you a better programmer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I should incorporate this into my workflow rather than me sticking my shell scripts in. I wonder if I could do a cron job that just scanned all my shell scripts, because I keep all my shell scripts in one place.
Haven't you been using Travis CI recently? I'm sure you could integrate it with that.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I like sometimes put them on GitHub. Yeah. I could probably put Travis on there to run this. That's a great idea. Oh gosh, that'll really highlight my ineptitude.
There's always room for more feedback. On our website, each episode has its own comments. So post yours on ubuntupodcast.org.
And now it's time for that wonderful feedback. First up, Ashley emailed us at show@ubuntupodcast.org.
In regard to KDE Neon based on Ubuntu 18.04, I thought I'd reach out as this release has seen GKSU deprecated and no longer available. Correct me if I'm wrong, but since this update, I'm no longer able to access Samba, which apparently requires GKSU. Is there a way around this, or is there a replacement that I can use?
Good question. I thought the thing that was replacing GKSU was PK exec these days, and the pop-up that comes up asking you for credentials is PK exec. I thought GKSU had been depreciated a while ago, but it still exists. You can still install it if there's something that still requires it, I guess. I've not had that problem myself. But I'd be surprised if you're the only person who has that problem, if Samba is, if it's as prevalent and needs to be used by Samba.
Next up, the internet's Adam Sweet emailed us.
Sorry for using ancient SMTP technology to get in touch with you. Hopefully you still have a teleprinter hooked up somewhere. You may joke. I've been using Ubuntu as my everyday home and work OS since Warty. I started becoming disenchanted after the move back from Unity to GNOME. I find GNOME 3 so much less usable than Unity. Honestly, after all the ire and gnashing of teeth over the introduction of Unity back in the day, I wonder how many of those people are now wishing it would come back. Yes. I'm intending to reinstall my laptop from scratch, and with 18.10 a few days away and no need for my laptop in the short term, I've decided to test drive a few other desktops and distros. It's been a long time since I did it, like Ubuntu Mate, Mint, KDE Neon, Elementary OS, and OpenSUSE, etc. Since you were talking about installing lots of VMs, I wondered, if you weren't using stock Ubuntu or Mate, based on your observed recent distro installs, what would you consider using instead?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Oh, blimey. KDE Neon. That's a simple answer.
But you already are using KDE Neon.
No, he says if you weren't using Ubuntu stock or Mate.
Yeah, but you're using KDE Neon enough for it to be a semi-stock.
Oh.
That wasn't one of the ones which you installed, which was like a new, might have been a new discovery.
That was one of the VMs. That was one of the VMs that I installed.
Okay.
It was 18.04 KDE Neon.
If it wasn't KDE Neon or Ubuntu stock or Ubuntu Mate, what would it be?
God, I don't know. I just don't know. Maybe Debian, maybe.
Okay.
I think. I'm just too used to apt. One of the things I did find out when I was doing those VMs is when you install OpenSUSE, if you accidentally type apt, it uses zipper behind the scenes. It knows you're trying to install a package and it goes, ha ha, apt doesn't exist here, but I'll under the covers. It actually, I think apt is a symlink to aptitude. And aptitude is a Python script. No, not Python, it's Perl. It's written in Perl, and that interprets what you wanted to do and then fires off zipper instead.
Wow.
So I wouldn't use that, but I probably would use Debian.
Okay. Ross emailed us.
It seems to me that people using a laptop with a discrete NVIDIA GPU alongside integrated Intel graphics often have trouble getting it to work on Linux, myself included. That is, until I installed Manjaro, having heard that they have a solution for this that works out of the box. Sure enough, all I had to do was select non-free graphics drivers when installing the OS. Now I just add Primus Run to the launcher for any application that I want to use the NVIDIA card, and I have a seamless switchable graphics solution, no settings change, no logout or restart required. Has anyone on the Ubuntu desktop team spoken to the Manjaro folk about how they achieve this? I'd love to see fewer people tearing their hair out over NVIDIA Optimus, no matter their chosen distro.
Yeah, I'd never heard of this Primus Run.
No.
Yeah, it's a wrapper or something, I guess, that sets the LD library path for the GL libraries, and I don't know how it invokes, but yeah, it's worth having a look at. I'll throw this at the desktop team.
There's a similar thing I used a few years ago called Bumblebee.
Yes.
Which, you know, it was a similar, I mean, it was a bit of a faff to set up. It wasn't just, you know, select it in the installer, but then it was, you know, you add a command before the launch of whatever app it is, and it uses the discrete graphics.
Hmm.
Next up, Ashley Anderson emailed.
Gents, I want to share that I too have joined on the Chromebook adventure. I got my new Lenovo 100E in the mail today, and it's already running Linux apps under Christini. I'd like to hear more about Martin's adventures in Chromebooks. Yeah, I don't know how far his adventures have gone. Last I saw, he wiped Chromium off the machine that he was playing with it on, because he was using that machine for testing Ubuntu Mate 18.10, I think. But we'll find out next time he's back.
Great. Mike, a visually impaired programmer, sends us an email.
For a long time, the GTK version of the Scintilla edit control was not accessible. There are a lot of IDEs for various languages in Linux which use the Scintilla control, so none of them were accessible, since the edit window was totally silent and the Orca screen reader was unable to work with it. Now, some enterprising developer, not the original Scintilla author, has made the GTK Scintilla accessible. This means to me that one of the last things which keeps me on Windows has now been solved, and I can be closer to ditching Windows completely.
Excellent. Oh, that's really super, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, making an accessible, well, any usable desktop, let alone a fully accessible desktop, is a challenge. So, more movement towards accessible tools is always a good thing. I mean, I know that there was, it certainly seemed like GNOME 2 had it mostly cracked. But since then, there's been sort of various issues. I don't think KDE ever really got there with accessibility in the way that GNOME 2 managed to. And I'm not sure how GNOME 3 and GTK 3 apps are in general.
Have you ever tried the Orca screen reader?
I have tried it, for testing purposes. Not obviously, it's hard to really know without being a daily user of a screen reader exactly how well stuff works with it, because you watch a person who actually uses it and they use it quite differently to how you might think it would be used.
Yeah.
The test that I remember Alan Bell used to do was close your eyes and try and install Ubuntu.
Yeah.
And see how far you get. And that was usually quite enlightening.
Yes,
and
I did once test an interface I wrote with a blindfold on.
Right. Yeah, it's quite interesting how challenging that really is. Yeah. And I have a lot of admiration for anyone who can operate a computer using that interface.
Yeah.
Agreed. And especially as in while you have your eyes closed or the blindfold on, you know what you're thinking it should look like.
That's true.
And so you're trying to link that to what the Orca is saying.
Yeah.
But to just have it described and this is the menu bar and these are the options and things, and you're sort of drawing it in your own in your own mind, it must be particularly difficult.
Right. And lastly, Chris Blasco sent us a message on Facebook.
I'm from Canada, and I just started listening to your show at the beginning of the season, and it's great. Oh, thanks, Chris. However, I have a bone to pick with you guys. On the second or third episode, you guys started to talk about a flavour of Ubuntu I'd never heard of before. I started to get very interested, so I started to Google for Ubuntu Martin, but found nothing. I also tried Ubuntu Marty, but still nothing. Next, I tried Ubuntu Martar. Again, nothing. I showed the segment of the show to my wife, who's an English expert, and she also had no clue. So I checked out the podcast notes on the page, and I couldn't see any reference to what you were talking about. After a few more minutes of scouring your site, I realized this entire time you guys were talking about Ubuntu Mate. Mate. I understand things are pronounced differently over there, but you guys really threw me in a loop. I still don't see how you get Mate from mate. Isn't the E silent, or is this a gnome sort of thing that I've never heard of before? Oh, crikey. So there's a few things here.
talking to an English expert didn't help you because it's not an English word, basically.
Right. Mate comes from, it's a South American word, isn't it? It's the drink.
Yerba mate. I think the proper pronunciation is mate.
Right, okay. But the Ubuntu Martin thing is a stupid joke about Ubuntu Mate, and I think it comes from the Australian podcast whose name has
System AU. They started it. We carried it on.
Right. Yes, that's it. So Ubuntu Martin, it refers to Ubuntu Mate made by our very own Martin Wimpress. It's a stupid in-joke, but we're sorry.
Yes.
And you see, this entire problem would have been solved had you gone with my suggestion of Mubuntu. You know it makes sense.
Right. So it was lovely having you on, Jesse. But no.
And that is all of the feedback for this week. And that is all for episode 34. Thank you very much for listening, everybody.
And thank you for coming along again, Jesse. That's very kind of you to join us in our silly mess.
That's quite right. This time I was invited back to Martin's house, so it was different the second time.
They've given you a key now, haven't they?
Yeah, a backdoor key. I could just get in and put my feet up on his desk.
Ah, excellent. So now you've got a key, we'll have to invite you back again.
Hopefully so.
Excellent. We'll have to see if that gets past the boss. See you next time.
See you.